integrable spin chains and various quantum field theories in 3 and 4 dimensions. So the first instance of such a relationship was discovered by Witten in 89, when he studied the relationship between certain spin chains without spectral parameter in Chern-Simons theory. And actually, this goes back to the work of Von Jones. Von Jones' work on the Jones polynomial came out of his study of integral spin chains. And then Witten realized you could embed this in Chern-Simons theory. So more recently, myself and also in work with Witten and Yamazaki have been working on lifting this to 4 dimensions to realize spin chains with spectral parameter in terms of field theory. So I'll be talking about that. And the other topics I'll be discussing will be the more algebraic aspects of spin chains that possibly weren't discussed quite so much in Pedro's talk, in Pedro's course, such as the Yangian and the various structures on it, and how that arises in spin chains and field theories. Yeah?
Can you use the microphone or put...
Well, the microphone is on.
Yeah.
But it's only recording, it's not amplified.
Okay.
I'll try and see Claire. Here we go. Somebody up there.
Yeah. Please, sir. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
So where to start? So just to remind you of some things Petter would have discussed, let's consider the Ohr matrix. For the XXX spin chain. So it's associated to a picture. It looks a bit like this, where each line is labeled by some complex number z, which is sometimes called the rapidity, or the spectral parameter. And it's a linear map which takes a vector there and a vector there to a vector there and a vector there. So it's Ohr, say, the simplest case in the group is SL2. And it's given by the formula is equal to Ohr of take two states there. I'll bring up the formula. There's some normalization, but this particular normalization is the best for us. So there's two terms. So the first term I have looks like I take EI, EJ, and then they just pass through each other. EI becomes EI, EJ becomes EJ with some factor. And then the second term is, you can think of, it's kind of like this. EI, EJ, EJ with this other factor. Okay, so I hope Pedro wrote this down and explained how to construct spin chains from this kind of thing. But the most important feature of this operator this satisfies the Yang-Baxter equation. which we can write diagrammatically as the following. I think I always kind of get it a bit wrong, so I'm going to bring up a picture so I won't make a mistake. One second. So you take three of these guys. This one goes down like that, and this one goes over there. And you want this to be equal to the same kind of picture where this goes the other way. So this one goes. So what this means, we label each strand by some number. Complex number called the special parameter. That complex number is the same in each strand. And I put states at the top. And every time I cross the strand, so at this guy, I will put the OR matrix for z minus z prime. And at this crossing, I'll put the OR matrix for z minus z double prime. Similarly, at this crossing, I'll put the OR matrix for z prime minus z double prime. So I hope this picture makes sense. So the Young-Baxter equation says if I do that over here, then what I get on both sides is the same. So people, you can write it out in more algebraic terms as an equation like this. OR 1, 2, z minus z prime, that's this guy. What's this one? That's OR 1, 3. Z minus z double prime, OR 2, 3, z prime minus z double prime is equal to, so we do the same thing here, we just read it down. So the first one we find is OR 2, 3. The next one we find is OR 1, 3. And the last one we find is OR 1, 2. OK. So I hope this equation makes sense. I personally can never remember this formula. But I like this diagram because the diagram just tells you we can slide this line over there. We can move these lines around, and nothing changes. OK, any questions about this picture and this formula? Yes?
When you write it like that, the R12 is just R acting on 1-2 tensors with identity on 3?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. So I should say R12, this is like C2 tensor, C2 tensor, C2. It's a So it's OR over here, and it's the identity here, as you said. So in terms of the picture, you know, when there's a straight line, I have the identity, and when there's a crossing, I have OR. So I can read it as like that. OK, so. Now, if you look at this picture, you might hope that there's some kind of fundamental physical reason why this might hold, that there's some topological objects with some kind of two-dimensional topological symmetry I can write down which will reproduce the OR matrix. So in such a way that this equation is just an obvious feature of the two-dimensional topological symmetry. So So the goal is to write down such a thing. To write, you know, the goal is to do that. So, as I said, there are two versions of the story. There's a three-dimensional version and a four-dimensional version. So, the three-dimensional version is the most famous one. So here we start with three-dimensional Chern-Simons theory. So this has Wilson line operators. So we can draw pictures like this, where these lines will be Wilson lines, and where this equation is obvious. So each strand to become a Wilson line. And so these pictures, so configurations of Wilson lines will lead in some kind of automatic, purely formal fashion. Yes?
Could you just explain very briefly what you mean by Wilson line?
Can I do that in a minute? Because I want to write down the action of the theory and the...
They might not know that. Yes, I was
worried about that. I'm going to write down the path order and exponential in a section. So I said the nice feature of this is that because Chern-Simons is a topological theory, the Ion-Baxter equation is just automatic, and you don't have to try to do algebra to cook up solutions of the Ion-Baxter equation. It's just immediate. It explains why there are solutions. So what we're mostly going to be focused on, so this version does not have a spectral parameter. We're mostly going to be focused on a version which has a spectral parameter. So let me write down the Lagrangian and the field content of this four-dimensional gauge theory. And then I'll explain what a Wilson line is, and we can do some computations to recover these formulas. So we're going to work on OR2. Times C with coordinates x, y, and z. This is a complex coordinate. Our theory will not be Lorentz invariant, but so what? So the fundamental field is a connection, our gauge field. So it has four components. You can write like this. So people in the quantum field theory class, do people study Yang-Mills theory? Wait, so the action So it's not the usual Yang-Mills action. Instead, it has a first, it only involves first derivatives and no second derivatives. So it's the integral half dz times a dA plus 1/6 integral dz times a. So are these kinds of expressions familiar to people?
I think so. You mean there's like form.
Differential form.
Product.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
And the right.
The wedge.
So there's wedge problems in DZ and as well, right?
Yes, this is the wedge here. Exactly. So, because this is a one form and this is a two form, ADA is a three form, then I hit it with DZ to produce a four form, which I can integrate. And the same with this. This has three A's, so this is a three form. With DZ, it produces a four form. So if you want to be you have to be totally explicit about it. So the quadratic term has it will have things like the integral of ax del z bar ay. Yeah. You expand all this out. And so there's a couple of terms, all of which look like this when you expand out this expression. Now, if you're familiar with the differential forms, you notice a funny feature of this action. This connection has four components. However, this component can never appear. Yeah?
Are there gauge indices or are they one?
I'm suppressing the gauge indices.
So there are gauge indices.
There are gauge. The gauge indices can be in an arbitrary algebra.
Right. Because otherwise they're commutative of a planet, right?
Exactly. If it was just for U1, it would be a free theory, you would only have this quadratic term. Okay, so the connection has four components, but if you calculate what this does, this component never appears in the action. That's because if there was a dz in this term, then wedging with dz would kill it. So only the other three components appear. So this means, the action has usual gauge symmetry. Now A to but it also has an additional gauge symmetry. A goes to A plus any function times dz, where f is an arbitrary function. Matrix, say, the algebra valued function. Okay, so this is a slightly funny feature. It means that if we want, we can gauge fix this gauge symmetry by setting the z component to zero. So we don't have to do that. Okay, so what other features does this theory have? So if you notice, think about what structures did I choose on this manifold to write down this action? On OR2, I didn't choose any structure at all. OR2 could be any surface with no metric, nothing like that. So it looks like this action should be invariant under all diffeomorphisms of OR2. there will be a quantum correction to that statement. It's true classically, but not quite true at the quantum level. So we'll worry about that another time. You can go even further. The only thing we've chosen is this one form. That's the only thing that appears in the action. So you can do even a little more better. You can apply diffeomorphisms independently at different points of Z. So this is like, there's some topological symmetry which will be important to explain why the Yang-Baxter equation holds. So the second thing we want to note about this theory is that it has a connection, so it has Wilson lines. So Wilson lines are the fundamental observable of any gauge theory. So independent of what we're talking about, Wilson lines are a very important thing to understand. Given any gauge theory, with gauge field A, say on Rn, so we can define a line operator so it's a line operator. One heuristic is that a line operator is a function of the fields which depends only on the position on how they behave along the line, just like a local operator is a function of the fields. It depends only on how the fields behave at a point. So the line operator is by the path ordered exponential. So say the trace and some representation of the path ordered exponential of the integral of the gauge field along some circle. So what do I mean by this? What does this path ordered exponential mean? Suppose that A is a gauge field for GLN. So that each component of A is an n by n matrix, then this path ordered exponential of the integral of A along some path, so in this case a circle, is a sum, so 1 is the integral so in every term. we take one copy of A and integrate it over T1, another copy of A and integrate it over T2, and each this is a one form whose coefficients are matrices. And I also multiply those matrices together. Okay? Does this make sense, or should I expand it out further? Yeah?
I think this is basically they've seen it as the Dyson series, right? The time being replaced by half.
Possibly. It seems funny to ascribe such a basic thing to.
Okay.
But I don't know. And if you have, if you have a time-dependent Hamiltonian, this is how you exponentiate it to get the time evolution operator. So that's a good way of saying it, because it leads to there's another picture of Wilson lines, which will give you exactly what you just said, and which in many ways is more useful. So we can introduce extra degrees, extra fields along the line, which can be coupled, which are coupled to the gauge field. So the simplest thing to do is to introduce a free fermion system along the line. For example, say for GLN, we introduce, say, psi prime, which are fermions, one-dimensional fermions, just living on the line, where psi is in the fundamental rep, psi prime is in the anti-fundamental rep. And then we can take the usual action. This is the action for a one-dimensional free fermion. And then we change this time derivative to the covariant derivative for this connection. So from this point of view, we don't see the path ordered exponential immediately. Well, all we've done is we've just introduced extra fields along the line and coupled them in the most obvious way to our gauge field. And as I said, this is, you may not care about integral systems, but in any interesting quantum field theory, gauge theory, you'll be studying Wilson lines. This is a useful way to think about them. So as an exercise, you might want to check that these two pictures are the same. This is a fun exercise.
So in all of this, you have an implicit trace over the gauge indices, like in the action?
Yes, sorry for the lack of. So here, let me include the indices. So the upper indices, because this is, one is fundamental, the other is anti-fundamental, so it's upper and lower gauge indices. And this has two indices because it's a matrix, and we just contract them. So in the first expression, we multiply these matrices, and what I should have said is we take the trace in some representation or of the product of these matrices. It could be any representation; different representation will give you different Wilson lines.
These are real fermions.
Excuse me.
These are real fermions. Are these real fermions?
I'm terrible at remembering reality conditions. There's n components here, n components here. So whatever. because maybe reality conditions all depend on the signature, and I'm always a Newtonian signature, and other people are not, so I never remember. Yeah. Okay, so here's a fun exercise. Look at the second expression. Integrate out.
Sorry, Kevin.
Yeah.
Might be a little bit confusing. I think if you have to put the traces there, you better put on the identity and on the path of the exponential as well.
Yes, thank you. I'm sorry. Thanks, Pedro. So some people might be familiar with the fact that once, if you integrate out a fermion, there's a functional determinant that appears. And you can calculate what the functional determinant is, and you find the first expression. Get the fermion. You get a path, the trace in a certain representation, the exterior power of the fundamental representation, tensor, the determinant of the fundamental representation, minus a half, of the path ordered exponential. So this is maybe a slightly advanced exercise in some way. I mean, if you're familiar with some manipulations involving functional determinants, you'll be able to do this. It's not completely trivial, I think. Okay. So let's go back to these theories of this nature. In the 4D theory we were discussing over there, so we can put Wilson lines. Well, you know, in ordinary gauge theory with ordinary gauge symmetry, this expression involving the path ordered exponential is gauge invariant. That's why it's a good observable. Gauge invariant observable are what you consider. But in this theory, there's extra gauge symmetry by shifting the gauge field by adding on dz. Now, if I drew an arbitrary path, this expression would not be invariant under that. So, but it turns out, as long as my path does not move in the z-plane, it will be invariant under shifting by dz, because then the path ordered exponential will not involve dz. So we can put Wilson lines, but only in the plane R2 at a fixed value of z. So the extra gauge symmetry this prohibits Wilson lines which move in the z plane. For instance, in the abelian, if everything was abelian, and I just, then the path ordered exponential is just an exponential, then I might consider take this connection and integrate it along a circle in the z-plane. Is that gauge invariant? It will not be, because if I add on a function of z, I will get a term involving the contour integral of this of f. So that will not be zero in general. Okay, any questions about this? So our goal is to understand solutions of the Yang-Baxter equation from these Wilson lines. So let me draw the cartoon for this, and then I want to do a Feynman diagram computation. So the claim that we're going to show is, so consider the theory for the Lie algebra SL2, and let's consider Wilson lines in the fundamental representation. So one is at, one might be at z and is vertical. One is at z prime and is horizontal. Like this kind of picture. Z prime. Now, the expression involving the path order and exponential is a nice expression if you have a closed circle. It tells you the value, the number you get in that closed circle. But you know, in quantum field theory, you want to maybe break the circle up into pieces or consider what happens at the end of a line. So at the end of a Wilson line, you know, if we think of the Wilson line as coming from some quantum mechanical system coupled to our ambient field theory, that makes it clear that at the end of the Wilson line, there will be a Hilbert space. And the Hilbert space for the coupled system will be built from the Hilbert space of the gauge theory together with the Hilbert space of the Wilson line that we've coupled in. So what we're going to consider here is you're putting states at the end of these Wilson lines.
So, question. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it usual to think of gauge fields as living in the adjoint of the gauge transformation?
Yes.
So here, but we are not doing that. We are just thinking of A as actually being in the fundamental.
No. I beg your pardon. I'm sorry if that was unclear. A is in the adjoint. Right. Was that?
Okay.
Yes. So it's the but the definition of a Wilson line, one chooses a representation. So this kind of appeared in both frameworks.
So sorry. So in the path order, the A is actually.
Yeah.
Answered with some fundamental, any arbitrary representation.
So A is like, say, A is a matrix valued field.
Right.
And then at each term, we take products of those matrices, and then we take the trace in some representation.
Right.
So if we get different representations, we'll get different kind of different coefficients in front of each term in this expansion. Yeah, because. Or basically, it's related to the character of that representation. So if I have a fundamental Wilson line, and the states at the end of the Wilson line, the space of states is just C2. The space of states is the representation in which I take the trace. And that's morally clear because the trace is in that Hilbert space. And we're really doing Dyson series, where the quantum mechanical system has a time-dependent Hamiltonian given by A. So we can put a state there, Ej, and bring them in, and they'll kind of something will they'll scatter off each other, and then they'll go out again. That will give me some matrix. The scatter will be scattering will be because they will be exchanged gluons from the four-dimensional theory. So the claim is that this operator, the operator depicted here, is the Ohm matrix. And secondly, the Yang-Baxter equation follows from the fact that the theory is topological. So we can think of the Yang-Baxter equation start like this, three Wilson lines like that. And then it just says, I can slide one of them around. That's one way of writing the Yang-Baxter equation. So because it's topological in this plane, you know, these Wilson lines are at different points in the complex plane. And at each point in the complex plane, it doesn't matter where I put that Wilson line, I get the same answer. So that's the Yang-Baxter equation. OK, so this is all kind of too abstract. What I really want to get to, I want people to come out of this course being able to compute things with Feynman diagrams.
I'm a bit confused. The built-in lines, are they in R2 or are they in C?
They're at fixed points in C, and the blackboard represents R2. So to get any feeling for this, for why this works, I want to explain how do I compute what happens when a single gluon is exchanged. So the Ohr matrix has an expansion. So the leading term is the identity, but then it has a term like this, h bar minus z minus z prime times ejI. These are the elementary matrix. The Ohr matrix is an element of GLN, has a GLN. So h bar will be the loop expansion parameter of the gauge theory. So the goal is to compute theory this one loop Ohr matrix.
What's the analog of the choice of representation in the when I think of Wilson line as a experiment?
Say that again.
What's the analog of the choice of representation when I think of Wilson line as fermions?
Well, I can take fermions valued in some representation, some real representation, and that will correspond to the exterior algebra. OK? kind of half of that representation. Just because you think about the Hilbert space at the end. The free fermion system will have some Hilbert space. Mm-hmm. That Hilbert space will have a G action. That Hilbert space is the representation of the corresponding Wilson line.
But at the end, I can put psi as I prime. So if I, let's say, I started with fundamental, I have.
Oh, but you've chosen different boundary conditions. They give you different states. But there's only one Hilbert space. The Clifford algebra has only one irreducible representation. It's like there's a Fourier transform, which is an isomorphism between psi and psi prime.
So is the tensor product, is that EIJ?
Yeah, EIJ tensor EJI.
So what is EIJ?
It's the matrix with the 1 and the IJ entry. OK, so have people done computations in Yang-Mills theory?
Some, yeah.
OK.
In the context of standard model.
Yes. Well, people have certainly done electrostatics. So we're going to be doing electrostatics. So. So how do I do that? You might think, how do I do a computation like this? So I have two Wilson lines, and they're exchanging a single gluon. What we're supposed to do is we take, so to compute this, one way might be to first might compute the propagator of the theory. And secondly, then you integrate it over the Wilson lines. This is, you can certainly do this, but it turns out to be a little easier to think about easier and equivalent. To do what you might do in electrostatics, which is take your Wilson line and look at the field that it sources. So, for instance, compute the field sourced by the vertical Wilson line. So this field will be some gauge field satisfying some equation, then integrate it over the horizontal one. So let me explain how to do this, because I think, I find this easier and kind of more routine. Yeah?
Just to clarify, so this is a Z plane, right?
Oh, I'm sure if the so the plane of the blackboard is
yep.
is R2, and everything is at a fixed position in the Z plane.
So those lines literally correspond to Wilson lines.
Yes. These lines are Wilson lines, and there's some gluon stretched between them.
But the blackboard is really just like two copies of.
Yeah, there's another kind of complex direction because these are at different points. They don't actually meet.
Yeah.
They're just projected onto. Yeah. So it's analogous to the way people draw knot projections. So how do we compute the field sourced by a Wilson line? So to do this, first thing to do, we choose a gauge. So the gauge we're going to choose, there's more than one choice, of course. First, we set the z component to be 0. And second, we ask that some linear combinations of the other components, the derivatives of the other components, vanishes. So if there was four components and I set all the sum of all four components to vanish, that would be called Lorentz gauge or Lorentz gauge, but this is the analog in this situation. Okay. This thing seems to be broken.
Yeah, sometimes it does.
Yeah. Oh, thanks. How did you do that?
It's the middle one. This is the middle.
So you know, the propagator, the thing we're computing, look at this diagram. There's no interaction between the gauge field line itself. The only interactions are between the gauge field and the Wilson line. So we may as well do this computation in the free theory and throw away the interaction term. So let's consider the free theory. And with this this dz ada, now let's add on. We're going to add on a term to the Lagrangian coming from the first term in the path ordered exponential. The integral, this is the integral over x, y, and z. This is just the integral over x. So you should view this term. So we're changing our theory along this line. And that change is given by introducing a Wilson line to the abelian theory. So how would we compute the field sourced by the Wilson line? Well, that's the...
You mean?
Yeah?
Ay, dy, no? Calling what we said before. You want to up?
I never remember if x is up or sideways.
Okay.
I don't know. This is a problem I've had since high school, actually. I don't know. Yeah?
So it seems like this easier method wouldn't take into account like exchanges of gluons from one Wilson line to itself. Do we not need to consider this for some reason?
It turns out that's zero. If you have the one loop approximation, that's a great question, though. But if you compute the propagator, it will always have like one leg on the x direction and one leg in the y direction. So for a straight Wilson line, you're never going to get a gluon leaving and coming back. Yeah, but that's a good point. Okay, so to compute this, to compute the field. The Wilson line. So all we do is we solve the equations of motion in the presence of this operator. And we also want to impose our chosen gauge. So this is not special to this situation. This is what, if you have an operator, you want to compute the field it sources, this is what you always do. You add on the operator to first order, you solve the equations of motion, and you impose your gauge fixing condition, that's the field sourced by the operator. So what's the equations of motion? There's a factor of two here. We vary A, we find that dz, dA, is the delta function on the locus, maybe minus the delta function, y equals z equals 0. because this is, you know, the integral. This is like the integral of A times a delta function. So we vary A, we find dz dA must cancel with this delta function. So you also have this equation. So the solution I'm going to write down the solution to the equation up to some factors of pi and 2 and some signs. This equation in our chosen gauge So maybe to remind you, if we were doing ordinary Yang-Mills theory, where this, we had a second order interaction, here I would have had some second order operator applied to A must be a delta function. And solving that equation would lead to the kind of Coulomb potential. A is 1 over R, which we remember from electrostatics. That's why. So we're doing a funny version of electrostatics. But because it's a first order equation, we get this extra derivative appearing. And it's automatic. If we look at this gauge, it's automatic that del y a y, del z, not del z bar. So this holds just because partial derivatives can meet with each other. So that's, right, if a y involves a del z, then I have a del y, and a z bar involves a minus del y, but the same function. So this automatically holds. And then, yeah, you can check that this equation holds too. So I'm kind of out of time, so let me just take a minute to explain how to do this integral. I mean, this kind of thing was one of the main things I wanted people to be able to do today. So I is it reasonably clear, you think?
Sure, that's fine.
Was it?
Take a few minutes, actually.
Yeah. Okay, but is it reasonably clear how we arrive at this solution, do you think?
Not to me, but to others.
Okay, maybe I should go a little further then. So it's clear that it satisfies the gauge condition because partial derivatives commute. Maybe it's not so clear why it satisfies that dA is a delta function. So the equation dA is the delta function on y equals z equals 0. We can write this out in components. And the component version of it says that del z bar a y minus del y a z bar. This is the same equation, saying that it's this delta function. And also that ax equals 0. So we look at the expression which I wrote up there, which I can't even see anymore. We have to check it satisfies this condition. So since AY is del z times 1 over r. A z bar is minus del y times 1 over r.
So how did we get ax equals to 0? From the action, from varying the action.
I suppose what this, strictly speaking, what this equation will tell us is that some derivatives of ax is 0. But it's, but if you also think about the gauge condition, that will force ax to be 0. I mean, it's clear that everything is independent of x. Right. Yeah, the right-hand side of this expression, we think about it as a form, only has dy, dz bar. Dz doesn't have any dx's in it. But let's finish checking that the equation is satisfied. Ay is del z 1 over r. Az bar is del y 1 over r. Now, then, I apply this equation. I find del z bar del z 1 over r plus del y squared 1 over r. And I want this to be equal to a delta function of y equals z equals 0. And this is true because in three dimensions, 1 over r is a fundamental solution of the Laplace equation. Okay, so we've calculated the field sourced by the Wilson line by this method. The last thing to do is to think about what happens when I exchange two gluons. So I look at the field sourced by one Wilson line and I integrate it over the other. So if one Wilson line is in the x direction, I'd say z equals 0, which is how we've written it. We just have to calculate the integral of this over the y direction at some fixed value of z. So this A is the field sourced by the Wilson line at z equals 0 in the x direction. So what we want is, is that the integral over the y direction of Ay, y where z is fixed at z naught or something, is going to be something like 1 over z naught. Because that will be the leading term in the OR matrix. So that's this picture again. We want this picture to be the leading term and the expansion of the OR matrix. So notice that I've suppressed the gauge indices, it's automatically going to be accompanied by Eij tensor Eji, because that's how the Casimir for GLN looks like. So as a final step, we can do this computation. So we're going to integrate the Ay. So it's a derivative of z. So this is equal to the integral del z 1 over, let's just say, do it like this, Z fixed. 1 over y squared plus zz bar, the half dy. Now, dimensional analysis tells you that this is proportional to log zz bar. Or if you prefer, you can take the z inside, this del z inside, perform the derivatives, and then calculate the result by using, you know, some change of coordinates or just dimensional analysis will give you the result of two constant, and you'll find 1 over z. Should I stop there? Have you, any questions? Yeah.
When you said that it's the analog of electrostatics, did you mean like two charged wires, something like
yeah.
that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So like, I have one charged wire. Like, what's the electric field sourced by a charged wire?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's the potential for that? It's 1 over R.
And just like the Coulomb potential,
yeah.
we can obtain from the first term in QED, you are doing the analogous thing here.
Yes. Exactly.
The first term, and that's the analog of like classical interaction.
Exactly. You take you take abelian angles theory, and you choose Lorentz gauge, and you solve. You put electric, some wire, and you solve the equations of motion, and you find the potential is 1 over R. Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's meet again tomorrow.